Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. You can't get just one. Okay, so that's not like some marketing hyperbole. You literally can't get just one. They come in twos. So like, if you want just one, you're going to need to find a friend who loves slow-roasted chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch sauce. Or a friend of a friend, or have an awkward conversation with a complete stranger to see if they're obsessed with chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch. Or you could just like eat them both because you're obsessed with slow-roasted chicken, bacon. Okay, you get the idea. The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. At participating Taco Bell U.S. locations for limited time while supplies last.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
If you've listened to this show for a while, you know that if there's one tool I absolutely cannot live without, it's the Onyx Hunt app. I use Onyx year-round to mark spots, find new properties, access landowner information, and so much more. But throughout the year, I tend to use the app differently depending on what I'm doing. Right now, I'm always using it to find streambank easements in the drift list. And when I'm not doing that, I'm using the wind direction feature to mark how wind and thermals impact areas I plan to spend time in this fall. To learn more about all the other features that Onyx offers, head on over to onyxmaps.com.
Next up, no matter where my spring pursuits take me, I know I'll be hunting in comfort with my Huntworth camo. They make high-quality, technical hunting clothing at a fraction of the price of other brands. Last turkey season, I hunted in temps ranging from the teens to the mid-80s, snowstorms, pouring rain, blazing sun, and all of that was during the same 10-day trip, and my Huntworth gear had me covered for every single bit of it. My favorites for this time of year include the Durham lightweight pants, the Shelton hoodie, and of course, the Winstead rain suit lives in my Hickory pack at all times. You can grab your Huntworth gear at huntworthgear.com.
Summer is here, and while hunting season might still feel like a long ways off, it's time to start getting your gear dialed in for this fall. This season, I'm proud to be partnering with XOP, makers of cutting-edge, lightweight, and affordable mobile hunting equipment. Whether you've been mobile hunting for years and looking for an awesome ultralight addition to your kit, or you're totally new to mobile hunting and want to give it a try without breaking the bank, XOP has a stand, platform, set of sticks, or a harness for you. This fall, I plan to be using the super lightweight X2 climbing sticks, retrograde platform, and the Mondo hybrid harness. Go build your kit today at xopgear.com. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things outdoors in the Badger State. Folks, I'm coming at you this week. I feel like I'm doing a parody of like the Meat Eater intro, but I'm coming at you this week covered in mosquito bites. Had one heck of a morning on the Wisconsin River, battling some tough high flows still, and battling the mosquitoes even harder. But I've got a guy with me right now who is no stranger to mosquitoes. If you follow him on Instagram, you'll see him in a head net this time of year. But I've got Brian Dombrowski on the line with me. Brian, how are we doing tonight?
We're doing good. We have no mosquitoes. I'm sitting outside, and it's the first time I've been able to do this in quite a while, sit outside.
Right? Enjoyably, yeah.
Yeah, enjoyably.
Finally just broke, and yeah, I don't know what the temps are like up by you, but I think we're sitting pretty at like 73 right now.
We're in the 60s probably, I bet you. It's beautiful.
Perfect. Yeah. Humidity finally broke. It's been a long time coming. I'm just hoping that we can now finally get like a break from the rain. But if it happens, it happens. But on that note, can you tell folks where you're from, in the state of Wisconsin here, ballpark there? And
Yeah, we won't tell maybe the exact spot, but no.
No, of course not.
No, but I'm from the right dead center part of the state. I was I'm born and raised in Wisconsin Rapids.
Cool.
And I actually live pretty close to there in Adams County now. And I hunt, center part of the state for the most part of this state.
You don't need to say that. That's
no, I don't care. I don't care. This isn't what you call a destination spot for most people. So,
Right.
They're going to go to probably, better pastures around the state than come to the sand country. So
sure. You can wave at them as they drive up. What is it? I-39 yep. Going up there.
Yeah.
Boats and motorhomes in tow. Yeah.
You betcha.
That's awesome, man. So for those of you who don't know, Brian is, from what I've gathered, you're one of the hardest whitetail scouters I've seen around there. Like, it seems like every time I open my phone and check social media, you're out in the field doing something with, with that mosquito net and, covering ground. We were just talking off air about, you're down in Illinois with Matt Lear, who's been on the show.
Indiana.
You do a heck of a lot of scouting. That's kind of what we're going to be talking about tonight, is as we start easing our way, inching closer to deer season opening up here, which is, it's coming around the corner fast.
I know you're
headed that's a great place to start. You're starting your season in
North Dakota
right this year.
Yep.
Awesome.
End of August. So
geez, I didn't realize they started that early. I thought that was like a September 1st or something at least. Smokes,
I've been tagged out there by September 1st already, so it's kind of nice.
Jeez. So you've been going out there for a number of years, right?
Yep, 13 years. This will be my 13th.
Awesome.
And
so what's the game like out there? I picture the early season stuff. I know we've all seen the videos of guys, spot and stalk, hunting velvet bucks and stuff like that. But what's the game out there? Is it a lot of glassing, or is it a lot of just going reading sign? How do you get on bucks?
I don't glass at all out there.
Okay.
A lot of people do. A lot of people like that visual. Mm-hmm. put a game plan together, see a buck coming into a field, hunt that. There's so many people going out there now doing that, though, it's hard to get on a specific buck right now. You know, there's a lot of people.
Right.
So I've been going, I've been diving into these bigger parcels that you can't do that with. And I've been getting in there and just breaking them all down.
Sure.
And based off of like historical, you know, interactions and everything. That's how I base my whole hunt off of. So I really don't do any glassing or anything. I'm just get out there day one and I speed scout.
Got it.
I'm looking for that sign I'm looking for and then throwing sits at it. So
sure. I like it. Well, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
I realized I didn't even get a chance to even, I didn't finish my thought there. We're going to be talking about woodsmanship, preseason scouting, and some early season hunting tactics there. We're just getting ahead of ourselves here, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a perfect segue right there. When you're going out there, I would imagine that translates to bringing things back here. Obviously, you know, back home, you're able to scout a lot more than just speed scouting and breaking down an area. But what does that speed scouting look like for you when you do go out of state?
So when I'm going out of state, I have a predetermined path I go out there, just drive out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm driving by the fields I want to check for crop rotations. By the time I get to my campsite, I should already have one set plan based off that crop rotation I've seen. And since I know where those bachelor groups kind of reside already, so that's step one when I get out there. So I already have that opening night set planned. And then as far as speed scouting, I'm diving into specific spots in specific areas, and I'm looking to see if maybe that scrape has opened up.
Sure.
I'm almost running. I'm running into these spots. I check it, nothing. I'm running back out. Get in my truck, go to the next spot, run in, check it, get out. So I'm flying all around there, just looking for that, you know, that scrape outside the bedding complex that I kind of know is there where the bachelor groups are. And that's what I'm checking for. You know, I don't really hunt fields much. They're like crops.
Yeah.
I know that's a big thing everyone does out there. They'll sit on that soybean field or sit on, but I'm trying to get back in there a little bit closer to the bedding.
Sure.
Cause some of these bigger bucks I've seen out there, and I mean, there's some dandies out there, I'll tell you. And then, the biggest bucks I've seen, you know, they're in the woods a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones you're getting on camera later at night or in the morning or something like that. But there's some big bucks out there.
Got it, man. And so from in preparation for this, I did some listening to some previous conversations that you've had with Josh on this podcast. And, you know, from what one of the things I gathered was you like hunting bedding a lot in the early season.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're going to be circling back to that, but I guess I've just got a question off of what you just said there in terms of running in, checking that scrape, seeing if it's open or not. I guess I have two questions here. One, how early do you, like these scrapes typically open up out like in and around bedding areas? And two, do you worry at all about blowing deer out when you go in and do that?
No, I don't worry about blowing deer out. Because how I'm entering it, I'm not going through that bedding area.
Okay.
A lot of the stuff is on the edges.
Sure.
So I'm not going into that bedding area per se. I have no problem blowing deer out there if I'm like in the middle of the day. I just keep scouting different properties. So that's how I scout properties. I just walk right through them. And then what I see, you know, the sign, I don't care about blowing deer out then. But when I'm checking those scrapes, I'm just coming in from the, you know, the hardwood side, or coming in from the side that heading out to the field, you know, checking it. I don't want to leave my scent, you know, closer to where that buck's going to be coming from.
Right.
And just checking it and getting the heck out of there. Checking for anything, you know, nipping branches, that kind of stuff. You're not going to see a lot of rubs this time of year out there, but those scrapes will be opened up if there's, you know, that bachelor group in the area.
And it's more of, at that point, just a community scrape, just everybody touching base. It's not necessarily a laying down of sign at that point. It's more just everybody checking in.
Correct. Yeah, it's more of a community scrape. Yeah, cluster scrapes an area, little okay. staging area. Yeah.
Sure. So does that do those types of scrapes when you come back home then too? How often are you paying attention to those when it comes to like your early season scouting and, you know, thinking about, you know, those opening morning sits and stuff?
Wisconsin, I treat it a little different.
Okay.
So in North Dakota, I'm not really after a specific animal, but Wisconsin I am.
Sure.
So in Wisconsin, I've kind of done my homework on that animal. I know he's still alive based off my intel from this year. Mm-hmm. And I already have a game plan together going into, you know, where I'm going to sit going into that area. But yeah. I will slip in there and just do a spot check just to see if he's leaving sign coming out. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily looking for a batch or group. I'm looking for that one deer. That one deer. And okay. a lot of times he's a loner around here, you know.
Because
mm-hmm. You ever notice, let's say you have a, you know, like he's palling around with another buck, you know, when he's coming up through the ranks. His one buddy gets shot off, you know. And then all of a sudden he's kind of a loner deer.
Yep.
You know, his buddy's gone. And he's there, but he's not.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the area kind of seeing everything going on. You might get him on camera once in a while, coming to a mock scrape you've set out, you know, for intel. But he's just kind of always keeping tabs on everything. But he's really, he's not in the mix of things yet, you know.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So that's, but.
Oh, I was going to say, so that's the primary difference between what I do in North Dakota and Wisconsin.
Got it. No, that makes perfect sense. So I guess, you know, bringing things to Wisconsin then here, I guess, what does a year look like for you from a scouting standpoint, from end of season through, you know, getting ready for opening day? What does that look like for you?
It's exhausting. It's exhausting. I'm actually, by the time, you know, gun hunting is done, muzzleloader hunting is done, I'll maybe take a week or two and just kind of relax. But as soon as I can get, you know, as soon as I get back in and I'm looking for that sign from that prior year, and that's December, January. Mm-hmm. And then I'm scouting hard all the way up until, probably May, end of May. I'm just every chance I get, I'm out there checking different properties. But, winter time is excellent for, especially that first snowfall, for tracking deer. You know, what did you miss? How are they moving through that parcel?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first, you know, first thing is that December snowfalls or something like that, when it's not very deep yet, just get on those buck tracks. And you can do this at night too, because, mm-hmm. you know, you can just get your headlamp on. And if you got a property down the road, get on a buck track and just start walking that through at night. And, you know, got your mapping application, and then you can overlay it at home and just see how he's using the landscape, so to speak.
Right. Well, definitely. So it's, but, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that's where I start anyway, is, you know, right after the season with that sign scouting like that. But
mm-hmm. Got it. And then come, you know, post green out, basically, or green up, how often are you, I guess, let me ask you this here. Are you always kind of exploring, or is it mostly the springtime you're really trying to get your spots dialed in? Or, like, I guess throughout a year, how many times will you revisit a spot?
Before revisiting a spot, I treat my scouting like triaging an area,
mm-hmm.
Triaging the season, basically. And I will have the first areas I scout are areas that I've known a big buck was the prior year based off the sign. And if I was hunting that buck, I go in there and I just break that area right down to, you know, I find out all the sign. The second type areas I like to triage are areas that I didn't necessarily think there was a big buck in there prior to last year's scouting.
Yeah.
So I'm just going into specific spots on those areas. Let's say it's a 400 acre area. I'm going to go into one spot in that parcel, or that, you know, they're a community area those bucks will be in, and I'm just going to check that one spot and then I'm out.
Got it.
And then my third areas are just my wild card areas, you know, the area, if I got time, I just keep expanding my horizon, looking, looking for something better. But coming back to how many times I'll go back in there, I do my initial scout right after the season. And based off of that, I got a list of areas, you know, and I put them in, I rank them.
Yep.
And then I have a to-do list based off of every single one of those spots, what I want to do. I come up with a game plan, how I want to monitor that area by setting trap lines. I call them like Troy Pottinger does his mock scrapes. He's kind of the guru on that. So I'll set trap lines throughout the marshes and staging areas. But I come up with that game plan. So that's my first trip out there. And then usually I only take one other trip out there to kind of prep everything.
Got it.
End of May, June, something like that. I'll get in there and double check everything, prep it. And then I might take a brief look at it right before the season. Checking the different, how everything's looking back in there.
Sure. For the most part, you're not revisiting a spot, doing any thorough type stuff. It's that first initial trip in is when you're doing the majority of your data collection. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yep. And as have you ever, you've been to a nursing home and you see how people, they've got a puzzle on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not to laugh at so, there's always a puzzle on the table and there's a deer over the mantle, but that's kind of how I break down an area too. How's that puzzle being put together? They do the outer edge first, right?
Yeah.
And then they put together the different pieces, the different areas in the puzzle that they can define.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of connect the dots from there.
That's
simple as that. That's how you, can break down these areas pretty quick.
Right. Definitely. I wasn't sure where you were going with the puzzle. That's like, all right, we're in the nursing home. We're cracking it.
we're gonna go everywhere. Yeah.
Right. No, that was a very succinct way of putting it. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
On the note of the trap line sort of thing and that Troy Pottinger stuff, I've heard a handful of his stuff just on other shows and whatnot. In terms of that, so that the way I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong here, it's a lot of basically like you take an existing licking branch, cut it off, and put it where you want it.
He does that. Yeah. I haven't, I'm not taking an existing licking branch anywhere. I'm creating my own based off that tree species that the deer like in this area. And in this area here, they like small oaks, they like the oak right behind me here. Mm-hmm. This would be an awesome scrape tree right here.
Yeah.
I'm basing it off the tree species in that area that they like. That's what I'm doing. And I'm in some of these bigger marshes, Mitch Rompola, let's say he used to scout a huge marsh and he had every square inch of that marsh he used to scout, mapped out. And when you do that, you understand all the deer movements in that marsh. You understand where the different groups of deer are. You understand where, the bucks, each buck's core area is based off the rubs they're leaving. You can kind of map all this stuff out.
Right.
So I'm just going in there and placing these mock scrapes, basically, in these different core areas. And I'm getting the inventory to see if the bucks that left the sign, from the prior year are still alive.
Sure. Got it. So then how are trail cams playing into your scouting? You run quite a few or
not a lot. I mean, I've heard people run like just tons of them. I got 14 right. out.
I was gonna say quite a few is relative, but
yeah I've heard people run 100 cameras. I'm like, I don't know how they do it,
right?
I got 14 cameras out, two cell cams, and the rest are like some cheap Tascals and stuff like that. But I don't run trail cams by areas that I can scout from afar.
Sure.
And I got those I've already thought of those properties on my initial scout. I'm like, I don't need to run a trail cam here. I can monitor this from the field edge or over here from my truck or a bike ride or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm only using trail cameras in areas you can't do that. You know, back in the marshes, back in the woods where the deer aren't coming out, you know, and that's the only way you can get intel on them. Otherwise, you'd have to either jump them or catching their sign or tracks, you know, chasing that after. I think that's where a lot of people make a mistake. You know, they see a big buck and they're like, I got to get a trail camera. I got to get a picture of that buck, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, no, don't do that. You know, don't do that.
Right. So not glassing, but necessarily, or not glassing necessarily, but rather just like anywhere that you can just get eyes on that deer. And you know that, you know, I think Aaron Warburton said it when I talked to him a couple weeks ago. He was just like, yep, like seeing is believing. Like, put eyes on that deer, and that is what matters. Like, don't chase the camera pictures.
And if I see a deer, you know, if I'm glassing the field and I see that deer come out, I've already done my pre-scouting. I already got my, I'm pretty darn sure I know where he's bedded in there. And I already have a stand, picked out.
Right.
So I'm just trying to get a visual on him coming out there. And if he comes out there, I kind of have everything already in that woods already pre-planned out. So I can just slip in there on the right wind or right set and, you know, hit it.
Right.
Take so a shot at him.
So what is your scouting this time of year and for the next, you know, the coming weeks here? We're recording this on July 17th, but as we move forward towards, you know, I mean, shoot, July 17th, we're two months out now from Wisconsin. So what does your scouting look like now compared to, or I guess as we lead into the season?
I'm doing a few different things. I'm trying to intermix scouting and exercise by I'll take my bike 10, 15 miles and I'll do big loops around here. And I kind of monitor by the end of summer, I'll know almost every single deer in this area. But you know, I'm going driving, glassing from afar like everyone else is doing, running my trail cameras. I'm trying not to check those any more often than probably about 3-4 weeks, you know, some, running in there to, you know, freshen up that mock scrape, maybe adjusting sets like that.
Yeah.
I'm not really, and I'm going to new properties yet. Every chance I get, I'm going to a new property and checking out. I don't even plan on hunting it this year, but I'm still checking new spots out. But I'm not being too obtrusive right now. I'm just keeping tabs on the, you know, the local food sources coming up. We got green beans popping up everywhere. So carrots, I might go spot check an area for, see how a crab apple tree is coming along.
Sure.
Or if, oaks have, you know, we got some oaks already starting back here. So,
right.
But I'm not being too obtrusive on my spots. I'm just the heavy lifting's already been done. So I'm just going in there and keeping tabs like that big buck from afar.
Yeah.
Just keeping tabs on things right now.
So. Right. Totally. So I know you're focus tends to be more on bedding, but we've been mentioning food sources here quite a bit. And I think even one of the first messages you and I went back and forth about, I was scouting a piece and I posted on our Instagram story, a giant turd. And it looked like it could have been human, but I was like, does anybody have any idea? It was on top of the snow, like early January. And I was like, what is this doing here? Like, what made this? Cause it was, you know, probably 3/4 of a mile from, you know, from any access point or anything like that.
But, I think I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. You and I went back and forth about like, oh, he could be eating like, you know, if there's like a,
That's right there.
Or something like that. And I was like, yeah, maybe. I don't like, I have no idea like what would make this thing or whatever. But one of the things you said to me was if it's a property that used to be an old farm, try and find an old apple tree or a crab apple tree or something like that. Those old farm properties tend to have fruit trees and stuff. But when it comes to early season food sources, specifically for like, we'll put it this way, for opening weekend through, you know, as things head into October when food really is kind of, you know, king.
Yeah.
What do you how do you prioritize, different food sources?
let's say you have a green field, alfalfa, something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not too concerned about that. When our season's opening up, if there's oaks, they're just starting to drop. And that's when that change is happening. You know, there might, I have pre-planned oak flats, you know, back mm-hmm. in the woods.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd be glassing a field and you'd be like, hey, where'd that buck go? You know, he's not coming out anymore. Well, he's heading that way into the marsh. He's going to that oak, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for these little secluded, little destination spots in the woods. Maybe CRP field or something like that, where there's a lot of browse.
Sure.
Stinging nettles, jewelweed, you know, just, we got the ferns. They mm-hmm. like those, you know, they love eating ferns. They love eating, maples, you know, young maples, they get cut off on logging operations.
Yep.
I heard on that, I was listening to someone talk about that. When those maples get cut off, they got a lot of stuff in their roots yet. And that new growth has all these nutrients in, like, it's supercharged that the deer really like.
Hmm.
But I'm looking for these secondary food sources away from the areas everyone can glass, basically.
Got it.
A lot of browse outside of the bedding complexes, a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, fresh oaks that are dropping, especially white oaks, if you can find them.
Sure. So you pretty much base your interpretation of whether or not the oaks are starting to drop by, okay, this buck's not showing up in the field that he was showing up in.
Yeah.
He's got to be on oaks now.
Yeah.
Now.
Yep. He's shifted to a new hot food source.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to find, you know, because that's that time of year, that's all they're doing is feed, you know,
right.
different. He's at a new hot food source. So through my prior pre-scouting, I'm going to have those kind of marked on a map and kind of know. I might slip in there and just check for sign leading out of that complex, maybe to that food source. Maybe there's a rub that opened up. Maybe there's a scrape or a nip branch or something that you can see. His track, maybe on a trail leading out there, but you might, you know, just do it, you know, you don't want to mess anything up, but just kind of get in there and take a look around and back out and, you know, hit it.
Right. So, you know, that brings up another question. It's the second time you've mentioned getting in there in a non-intrusive manner, taking a look around, but getting out so that you're not
yep.
really alerting them or at least going where the deer are traveling. How do you do that? Like for folks who are looking to go and figure out, you know, one of their own properties right now, do some preseason scouting here, how do they go in and check an area without blowing it out?
I would wait till probably like a more of a midday type of time. I'd wait till the wind is right,
mm-hmm.
not kind of blowing in there. They might know you're there. I mean, around here we have wolves, we have bears, we have bobcats, coyotes. I mean, we got everything out of bird hunters. People mm-hmm. walking in the woods all the time. So I will not go into the main bedding areas though that I think that buck's bedded.
Sure.
I'm gonna stay away from that, but I might be a couple hundred yards from that and I'm just gonna take a look around, take a look down the trails real quick. I don't wanna leave much sign, but I'm just get in there, you know, get the intel you need and get out.
When you're walking in there, are you walking on the trails or are you going parallel to them or?
A lot of times we'll have like a creek, there'll be a creek bed or something like that. And I'll walk that creek in with knee boots. A lot of the streams out here, there's a lot of trout fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
So they're leaving trails along the streams.
Sure.
So I'm going to use that. I'm just going to use basically anything that is normally being used.
Okay. Got it.
You know, and I don't want to be too obtrusive, like, you know, get in there, but just get the intel you need, get mm-hmm. the sign you want to see.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's, you know, we were talking about that last week with Dave McChesney, and you're kind of talking about how, you know, when you're walking in areas where they've gotten used to human scent being,
yeah.
they don't really care too much. It doesn't yep. seem like they care too much. It's when you start getting into the stuff that they know, like, wait, that smells a little too close. I'm not so sure about this. So no, that makes perfect sense.
And I'll tell you what, some of the biggest bucks I know of are right underneath everybody's nose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are, I'm hunting around people. I mean, cause I know that buck's bedded over here, you know, in this area, and I got people walking every, and it's crazy sometimes where they bed, but they
Right.
don't,
Well, and a
they
lot of
won't
it,
move. You.
yeah, exactly. And a lot of times too, they're betting to monitor. It's one of the things that I've been talking with Josh Raley about and stuff, and things that he's learned through his consulting that he's doing now. And he's like, dude, the biggest buck on that property is always bedding so that he can monitor that house or that shed or that barn. Like he's just over the military crest, or he's up on a ridge that he can see everything, or just off of a trail, whatever it may be. So that makes perfect sense that they'd be doing the same thing in those areas too.
And I always look for seems like those, you know, the bigger ones, they always put some sort of geographical feature between them and their travel. So let's say they're feeding out into this field to my right here. There's a stream right here. They're always coming back, crossing that stream, and they're within almost, you know, eye shot of the stream. They can hear anything coming. They got the wind coming this way. I mean, it's just, you know, they're always putting some sort of geographic feature, whether it's a grassy field or something in between them and their destination food for later that night, it seems like. So, yeah, when you find those spots, it's just like, aha, you know. Well, then you can kind of put together when they're bedding, they're based off the wind, you know. Like, I find a bed on this. Okay, the wind must be coming this way. The food's over here. You know, you kind of see how you can, you know, put it together. Well,
Definitely. Now, in early season, how often are you finding bucks bedding? People talk about like their summer bed sort of thing. How often are you finding them bedding in, say a spot like that, say it be along a trout stream or whatever, but in proximity to a bean field or something like that, or whatever food source it may be, as compared to later on once, they shift more inward.
Right now, what I've been noticing is everything's bedded, you know, closer to that feed right now, closer to the field edges. Everything's greened up, everything's lush. There's so much foliage right now. The grass is, I mean, they don't have to, and there's not a lot of people getting out in the woods right now because it's just nasty. So they're not pushing the deer back right now. So they're bedded as close as that. They're bedded pretty darn close to that food source. A lot of my cameras right now are pretty dead, so to speak. You know, I mean, I might get one picture of a buck in that area that I'm after every so many weeks, but that's okay because I'm basing it off the sign later on in the year when that buck's going to be moved, you know, pushed back into that area.
When it
Because that,
counts.
yeah, the, I mean, the foliage is going to be dropping off the trees and everything, and then they kind of move along with that as the season goes, you know, the foliage and the pressure from people, because you know all the private land people will be pushing the deer back into the marshes a little more. The people in the public are going to be pushing in a little more. So I'm kind of that's kind of a lot of the shift too I'm waiting for. So.
Definitely. No, that makes perfect sense, man. I want to switch gears here a little bit more towards woodsmanship. It was something that you and I had, kind of kicked around discussing. You mentioned, looking for spots where the deer have, nipped off branches or nipped off buds and stuff like that. I guess I'll start with this. What do you think is some of the most missed or overlooked sign?
I'm a big rub guy. I love
Okay.
rubs.
Got it.
I hear a lot of guys, you know, they see a big rub and they're like, hey, you know, nicer, you know, there's a big buck in the area. I kind of look at a rub like it's like a deer signature. And I believe that the tree species that deer is rubbing on is indicative of where he's from. So if you see a buck rubbing on a lot of pines, I believe his core area is probably going to be around a pine thicket somewhere. Or if you see him rubbing on a lot of birch, you know, I believe he's going to be maybe in a patch of birch trees in that field. I believe that based off the signature though on that rub, it's very unique. Each deer rubs a certain way, a certain height, certain characteristics in that rub. And I kind of break out, you know, I mean, you can even tell if that buck has split brow tines on that, you know, I shot a buck a couple years ago that had split brow tines, and or had one split brow tine, and you could see that right in a rub, you know, just plain as day. And then once you know that's his rub, I can follow that buck all around that marsh, you know. And then he's over here, so I got his kind of his core area over here. And then based off of, I think MSU Deer Labs did a study in like 650 acres. It's like the average deer home range.
Right.
Then you can kind of, you know, get a map going of that particular buck you're after. But rubs, definitely rubs, just tracks in general. I like, so let's say you want to track a deer or something like that. You can even track them in the grass, let's say in the morning. You know, that, you know, I don't want to do it in midday, but I'll want to do it in the morning when the sun's at an angle. So that way you can look through that grass and you can see the shadows.
Sure.
You know, you can see the shadows, you can see the stride, and you can kind of follow that deer right through the grass, right back where he's going. You can even see how when they're walking through that tall grass, it's all going a certain way. You know, so you can see the direction of travel.
Right.
As he's going through there. I think, I don't know if a lot of people do that, but you can see how they're using the landscape to get back to their bedding or from their bedding.
Mm-hmm.
Nip branches. Sometimes they're not going to be rubbing yet. Maybe they don't have a scrape. But you'll see the nip branches coming off of trails from their, you know, their bedding complex, as you can see. I based a hunt off of North Dakota based off a nip branch a few years back. And I have a video where I seen a great big 10 come from there that night, just based off that one nip branch. And he was just down the hill. And then I videotaped a really nice 8. I should have shot, kicking myself right now, but full velvet 8, just 7 yards away, walked right by me, but I had already seen that one.
Sure.
But just the subtle, those little details, you know, and I think everybody sees the details, but they don't, it's not, it doesn't click maybe right away until they get a few years under your, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those little details that stick out.
Right. Well, I think everybody can, you know, everybody pictures a deer track. Everybody can identify, all right, this deer trail is heavily used. It's beat down to the dirt. There's a bunch of tracks in it. It looks like there's tracks of varying sizes. I bet a lot of deer move through this area, right? And so, you know, it's easy to, you know, spot a track, but knowing what to do with that track is another thing. And I mean, that could be an entire podcast episode or three, but I mean,
I would suggest people get out there at first. If you have snow in the area, get out there at that first snow and, just walk those buck tracks through the areas you're hunting and see exactly where they're going.
Yeah.
You're going to learn so much how he uses that landscape. Another thing too, I was just thinking, you know how you're in the woods and you want to get over here, but the landscape keeps taking you this direction. You know what I mean? Like no matter what you're trying to fight to get over here, but every time it's guiding you to the left, you know?
Yep.
I mean, just that's doing the same thing for those deer too.
Yep.
You know, just the natural flow of the woods. Just walking through the woods and just the natural flow of how down timber is in the woods. It's going to, you know, it pretty makes like little highways through there that you don't even realize.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, you know, you kind of notice this stuff when you're, well, yeah, just, that just came to mind there.
Yeah, no, that's something that I don't know that we've ever talked about in this show, but that's, I find myself doing that quite a bit. Cause I am by no means a great track or sign interpreter. Yeah. You know, I know my scrapes, I know my rubs, I know, you know, my trails, and, you know, I like to think that I'm fairly good at, you know, dealing with topography and stuff like that. But, you know, it's the kind of thing where, if you're walking through the woods, whatever,
don't fight it.
Don't fight it. And you're probably going to find yourself, you know, if you yourself look through the woods and try to get to, you know, one spot or another in the easiest way possible, you're more than likely going to find yourself on a deer trail or right next to one. Probably 90% of the time, right? Like they don't want to go through the briars and brambles and stuff like that any more than we do.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, if they're not getting pressured out there, they're going to move, you know, they're going to move within cover, but they're going to move the easiest route through that cover.
Mm-hmm.
So just I guess just listen, you know, to where that landscape is taking you.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of scouting that way on new pieces, you know, where I don't look at aerial photographs a ton, mm-hmm. you know, and I like to get into a new property and just kind of let it take me, you know, it mm-hmm. takes me where it takes me. And usually I can find right what I'm looking for in there. So you're going to find pinch points. You're going to find stuff you don't see on aerial photographs, like get all these down trees, you know, angled this way. And you got some over here, and it produces a pinch point through that woods, mm-hmm. you know, that you just can't see. So,
yeah, absolutely. One thing that we don't hear talked about a lot that I think is a big part of woodsmanship is kind of on the note of here of how you move through the woods. How do you exercise stealth when moving through the timber, when you're trying to get into a spot?
So how I do that, of course you're staying on the downwind side. If you're talking mm-hmm. about a hunt situation.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so, let me think of it this way. So, you know, we hear a lot of guys talk about how like, oh, you need to like tape your gear down, tape your stands, stealth strip, all that stuff. We hear about being quiet in that regard. Quiet. I think that's where my mind is going.
Okay.
Quiet, stealthy, you know, basically how do you move through the woods without deer knowing that you were there?
I think, I mean, I don't know if that's ever possible to, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to know
knowing you're that there. You're there within the moment.
Correct. Correct. I like to use, I mean, first and foremost, you get, as far as footwear goes, mm-hmm. I like a softer shoe with a smaller footprint. Mm-hmm. I like my knee boots. I use a lot of Elf lacrosse, these Lagrange, I think they are. Mm-hmm. But you can feel everything underneath your feet, you know, with those. Everything's pretty wet anywhere where I'm going, but walking through the woods off that trail downwind to where I want to get to, everything's quiet. My clothes, you know, I'm wearing clothes that do not make any noise. I don't care what brand they are, but as long as they don't make any noise. But I like to have that feel with my feet when I'm walking through there. I can turn them a certain way, get in and out of the, you know, it's, but
yeah,
that's no, primary, that, you know, I mean, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, definitely. No, and that's kind of what I was getting at there was, you know, how do you move through the woods quietly? You know, it's
through some of the thicker stuff I'm going through, you know, you're swimming through it, you know, mm-hmm. you're just kind of swimming through it, parting it. You're not, just don't fight the woods, you know, just kind of, you know, just move through it nice and stealthily, just moving stuff to the side. You can get in there really quiet.
Right.
You know, just take your time, plan out your routes. But yeah, you can get in there really quiet.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. You're going through there, you pop a stick, you know, dead quiet, calm morning and stuff. You're going through big, huge stick pop underneath your boot accidentally.
Yeah.
Do you wait it out? Do you give it a couple seconds or do you just keep on going?
If it's in the morning,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to probably keep going.
Sure.
Because that I'm going into a spot in the morning, like early season. I'm basing that hunt off in the early season that buck's on a distant food source. And I'm going to get in there pretty early and I'm waiting for that buck to come back. You know, if he's already back there, if he already hears me in there, then it, you know, it's already a mute point at that, you know,
right.
that time. I'm basing it off. He's at a little further distant food source, you know, like let's say North Dakota, they travel quite a bit out there. Some of those deer. So they might be feeding a mile away from where they're coming back into that bedding complex. Mm-hmm. I'm able to get into where I need to get before daylight, you know, quite a few hours, and I'm just waiting for them to filter back in there. So I'm not too worried about that stick popping. But if that buck you're after is on a food source, maybe 200 yards from where he's bedded, then, you know, I probably wouldn't even go in there, you know, because it's just, you don't have enough, you know,
buffer zone.
You don't have enough buffer zone for that buck to be traveling back through there. Mm-hmm. So I'll base a lot of my early season sits off that.
Sure.
You know, how long I think that deer is going to take to get back to that bed. So if he's bedded tight, I'm going to wait till night and I'm going to move in there at night.
Yeah.
You know, if he's tight to his food source. Mm-hmm. That allows me to get in there a little bit better at night.
Right. So,
'cause he's not going to move as far either, you know, mm-hmm. at night. If that food source is really close to him, he's just going to get up and kind of mill around there. And so,
right. Yeah, that's super true. With that in mind, what does your early season strategy look like if we were to break it down?
So it's
kind of touched little bits and pieces of it, but what, yep. if you were to comprehensively lay it out, what's your mindset looking at early season?
Aggressive.
All right, I'm pretty like aggressive. It.
I'm taking my shots right away. I can't guarantee that buck's going to be there. Someone else, you know, hunting public land. We got bird hunters. We got so much stuff going on. I cannot sit back and just be like, well, you know, maybe there's a couple areas I know people aren't getting into. I'm going to do that. But for the most part, I can't just sit back and let the season happen and not take a shot at that deer. Mm-hmm. So let's say early season. I love mornings. I love mornings in early season. I've shot my biggest deer early season in the morning. I've seen my biggest deer in the morning. It's just, they're just magical. It seems like mm-hmm. when you can put together, where you figure that buck is bedded and where his feed is and slip in there in the morning and you catch him coming back, not even knowing you're in there. And that's just something magical about that. But yeah, it's primarily trail cameras or something like that. I'm coming back in there. Nighttime, I'm going to do a lot of nighttime sits too in different areas that I, you know, think I just have a better shot at that deer by slipping as tight as I can to that bedding complex and basing that off of where I think that buck is bedded, feeding, that hot food source. I get in there, and if I see the sign I want to see in that staging area just outside that bedding complex, you know, I might be standing 100 yards away just kind of sitting around with my binoculars glassing out different areas to see if there's sign I'm going to set up. But a lot of that early season at night, you're scouting your way in.
Yeah.
You're looking for that fresh sign. I'll have one spot in mind, and while I'm heading back there, I come across a spot a lot closer that's just really fresh sign. You know, I'll set up on that immediately. Overall, it's pretty aggressive going to early. I'm taking my shots, you know, and then I probably won't go back there maybe until, you know, pre-rut or something like that. But
sure.
I have enough sets out there. I got so many properties I can hunt, you know, in public. You just, mm-hmm. it's, you know, just going all over the place.
No, I like that. And I like that you, I'm with you there. I like a morning sit in the early season, usually just because that's when I can find time to do it.
Yeah.
Is getting out there early in the morning and everything. Cause the early season too, I mean, you're getting out there usually at, 5 a.m. if not earlier, like you should be, you know, it's the days are long early season, you know? And so, you know, that over, around one of the spots that I hunt, we've got a lot of apple trees and like in the morning, holy smokes, on the way back to bed are those deer hitting the apple trees. Like
just hammered them.
Yeah. It is just nuts. I mean, I think they spend the evenings up in the cornfield or the bean field up above it. But then when they drop down kind of to that secondary food source, like you mentioned there, I've had a lot of luck doing that.
Yeah. So have you ever, go ahead. No, well, have you ever smelt a buck in the early season just walking through the woods?
No, I haven't.
So I was hunting and walking into this area, pitch black. I haven't, you know, North Dakota, my first morning out there. I didn't scout it at all that year. I'm just walking back to this set I had pre-arranged. And I got back probably within 80 yards of my stand, and I could smell a buck had been there. You know, that his musk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this weird sense. You get like one whiff of it. It seems like then it's gone. You know, I'm trying to smell it and it's just gone, but I just smelled them. And I got set up in my stand and shot that buck as he was coming back in there, you know, right at about 7:30 in the morning. When I was walking back out, right where I'd smelled that buck, there was a fresh scrape that he had just opened up. You know, I was about 10 yards from it. So, I mean, it was just in that little bedding complex he was in. But yeah, it's kind of neat. You'll be walking through the woods and you get that whiff. You just get that smell of that musk. And, you know, it's usually like a one shot deal. You know, I'll smell it and then it's gone.
Yeah. But, no, I'm with you there. The one time I've had it where I've actually been able to really smell a deer. Yeah. I got in and I set up last November 1st last year. I ran into this spot and I had no idea that at the base of the tree on a honeysuckle bush, a little tiny scrape had opened up. And so I set up, literally within feet of this thing. Like I'm standing hung right above it and thermal starts rising kind of up the hill, coming up into my face. And this doe comes in, starts working the scrape. And dude, I was almost dry heaving. It reeked. It was so bad, but yeah, that's like, it is a similar thing though. Cause I think on the times that I have smelled bucks though. Yeah. You're right. It's a fleeting thing. You catch one little bit of it.
Yeah. And just being able to recognize you're close, you know, and he's probably a more dominant buck in that area that, you know, especially early season.
Right.
He's already kind of, but it's pretty, you know, he's close.
Mm-hmm. So. Definitely. So we kind of touched on him a little bit when we kicked things off here, but what are your plans for this entire season?
So I'm going to start out in North Dakota. I'm going to head out there for a week and hopefully get another velvet. There's something about velvets I really like. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do that. And then we're going to swing back to Wisconsin here and their season rolls around the following week. So we're going to hit that up. And then I might be going down to Indiana for a few long weekends.
Mm-hmm.
I did some scouting down there. And depending on how North Dakota and Wisconsin pan out, I'm going to go down to Indiana for a few long weekends down there. But
awesome.
It should be pretty fun. I might, if I go down, hopefully Matt Lair from Mobile Hunters Dojo there, he might be going. I'm going to shoot him a message. He said if he had an opportunity, he'd come down there with me. So that'd be kind of cool because I don't hunt with anybody. Usually it's by yourself. So.
Right.
It'd be kind of neat to share, you know. I mean, that's the way it's been through my whole career, you know, almost is, you know, solo, solo type of guy out there. But.
Right, definitely. Well, especially in a bow hunting sense, you know, everybody kind of, I think it's easier to have that camaraderie around, you know, gun season and you know, deer camp and stuff. I mean, especially, you know, up by you where that, you know, that's kind of where the classic Wisconsin deer camp image comes from is, you know, your area and north, but you don't really hear it talked about or see it done really at all, you know, from an archery standpoint. Cause it's just, you know, a lot of times it is so individual. Cause I mean, shoot, you can't really do drives with a bow or anything like that. And that'd be really cool.
It's hard too. You know, I mean, you gotta find someone that you hunt with the same mindset kind of, you know, and that you could trust, share information with, and, you know, you don't have any, you know, basically it'd be hard to find someone, I guess, you know, unless you're close to that individual. So,
Definitely. Yeah. I was telling my sister, she was traveling, with a friend of hers and they were going to be renting a camper van. She's studying abroad down in New Zealand right now, doing her master's, and she and her friend were going to rent a camper van and they're going to drive around for just the two of them for a week. And I was like, when you get back, you are either going to love that person or you were going to hate their guts. She was like, yeah, I don't know, we'll see. And sure enough, she was like, oh my God, were you right? Couldn't do it. Yeah, I think hunting partners are the exact same way, especially when, if you guys aren't on the same wavelength in how you think about a hunt and how you go about doing things, it does get really easy to get frustrated.
If you had two like-minded individuals, you could really break down an area quick, you know.
Yeah.
Let's say if you didn't know a property and you wanted to stage hunt it or something like that,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you could that and share information, and that, I mean, that'd be pretty cool. You could really knock down a lot of deer that way.
Right. Yeah, that would be, especially for, you know, learning a new property out of state. I think that would be extremely effective. Just, you know, you take one region, I'll take the other. And
yeah, and you just keep stage hunting it in and pushing the deer back to where, you know, keep eliminating areas that way. So
right. I like it, man. Well, on that note, what are your hesitate to say goals, but what are you working on the most this season?
As far as what I'm going after or what?
Just as a hunter, as an outdoorsman here, what's something that you're working on this year that you really want to improve on?
I always want to improve on my consistency. I always thought about hunting as more of a percentage principle, where every bit of knowledge that you can gain will up your percentage in the field. So I'm always pushing, you know, to get that percentage level up, whether it be reading stuff, learning stuff, scouting new properties, just keeping your eyes and ears open, not falling into a rut by doing the same thing over and over again. I'm always trying to get my to be consistent. You have to have you want that percentage up there, being able to harvest an animal. I guess that's, you know, I'm just always striving to be consistent out there.
Yeah, no, that's something I think that everyone can do. That, you know, on that note too, what habit do you think holds hunters back the most?
I think I remember talking about this with Josh back in the day, but I've being scared of doing stuff and then messing up. I was in camp one time and I heard some other guys talking about, you know, you're out there for 4 or 5 days, right? And if you're out of state or something like that, or a couple of days, and they're like, oh, I can't go in there. You know, the wind's not right or something like that. I'm like, get it. Yeah. I mean, what do you got to lose? You know,
right.
You're not going to be back here probably till next year. Get in there, see how the wind is acting, and make sure wherever you sit, you can shoot that spot the wind's hitting. You know, if you expect that deer to come out, just make sure when that deer smells you, you got your bow at full draw ready to release.
Right.
You know, just, I think people get, you know, they're too cautious. They overcomplicate things. And probably just don't trust their, you know, their guts, you know, their feelings about a situation.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people, they've been, you look at deer content articles and stuff like that everyone's been reading for the last 15 years or so, and it's a lot of it's geared towards that private land guy who's like, well, don't burn out your stand, your favorite stand before the rut, or don't you, everything's been so rut focused. But you're absolutely right, if you've only got a couple of days or you're on public land, and shoot, I mean 20, 30 guys are going to be in here in the next, you know, in the coming weeks or so. Like you said earlier, it's like early season, like get in there and freaking let it rip. Cause if not, who knows what's going to happen. If that buck's even going to stay in the area, if he's going to get shot by, you know, somebody else or whatever, like if you're going for it, you need to go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Unless I know that nobody's getting back into a certain area, then I'll hunt it a little differently. But if it's, most of the spots aren't like that, as you know. You got to take your shot. If you know a good buck's in there or whatever, you know, get in there, take your shot on it. Just don't overcomplicate things. I think everyone, you see a lot of people overcomplicating everything, I guess, when it comes to hunting. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's just trust your feelings, your woodsmanship, trust what you're seeing in the woods, what you're, you know, just trust that. So you got a lot of, let's say you're an engineer or something like that. You know, you're really data driven. We'll use an example. Like I worked at a paper mill for a few years way back in the day, and you got an old guy running the paper machine for 35 years, you know, and he has the, you know, woodsmanship, let's say, or the experience, and he's sitting at that machine and it's 4 o'clock in the morning and he can hear the way that machine's running. He can hear the hum of the humming. He can hear the hum. He can feel the floor vibrate a certain way. And he knows that machine's running optimally, you know, based off of 35 years experience. He's just sitting back. Mm-hmm. Then you got a guy that, then you got a paper engineer, let's say, says, this machine can run 500 feet faster per minute. That's the specs. You look at him and he just go, okay. Turns it up 500 feet. It blows up paper everywhere. And he just, you know what I mean? Just, yeah. You know, that's just keep it simple. Trust what you feel, trust what, you know, just trust your gut out there.
Yeah.
Cause that woodsmanship over the years will build up, you know, as far as being able to recognize the little details in the woods and the sign, mm-hmm. you'll be able to look at it and be like, I know what that buck's doing because, you know, I've seen it 100 times or something like that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that, you know? I mean, I was going to say that what comes with that too over time is confidence.
Correct.
And you quit second guessing your stuff. And I know, like, I'm part of the problem here, but there's like, a million podcasts and a million articles and stuff like that, breaking down the very minute details. And there's things that, yeah, I mean, you can make a whole podcast out of them. You can blow them up and you can really get into the depths of it and everything. But by the time you're figuring out, okay, like, so I need to worry about my thermals. I need to worry about how I'm going to access this. I need to worry about what phase of the, you know, of the season it is, have the bucks shifted, what's the pressure look like, what are they, you know, like, you can drive yourself crazy trying to find or trying to wait for something to be perfect, but rather than just getting in there and figuring out, hey, this will work, this won't, either way, let's throw a sit at it or something, that's how you're going to learn.
Just keep it simple. Mm-hmm. I mean, these deer aren't, you know, they're not a mythical creature of, you know, they're pressure based, they're food based, they're, you know, rut based, you know, they're simple animals. Mm-hmm. And I think people just overcomplicate everything, you know?
Yeah.
And you get out in the woods and you just keep walking and scouting different properties. And over the years, you know what you're looking for. Cause when I'm scouting, I'm looking for that certain buck. And I'm just burning through all these properties looking for that certain sign I want to see. Mm-hmm. And when I see that sign, then I start to, you know, a deer, it'll put me in the game at least. I don't know if he's in trouble, but it'll put me in the game.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, just, you know, keep it simple. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. There's people that know every single piece of grass out there, all the different names of everything, and you know, I'm not into, you know, timber stand improvements or food plots. I don't have to deal with any of that stuff. I don't have any private land to do that, so all of my focus is just based on scouting, and that's why I'm doing so much of it. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about anything else but scouting.
So, right, I like it, man, dude. Fun. Well, shoot. This has me fired up for early season here. I'm feeling that tingle to get aggressive, but you know, push the envelope a little bit right off the bat and really see if we can't get in and surprise something here this fall, man. This has me fired up. And dude, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, you saw the post of that one buck I had on my Instagram?
Yeah,
there's that real wide.
Yep.
That's a shed right there.
So. I was looking at that thing while we've been recording here. That's a that G3 is. Did you measure that thing?
Yeah. No.
Holy smokes.
That's from over 2 years ago.
Dang.
So I was like, yeah. that's my white whale. So.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he will be very nice this year. I think that was the first thing I said when you posted that picture. It was like, oh my god, like I can't wait till the velvet's gone so we can see what he's actually gonna look like.
Yeah, that picture was probably 50 yards from a road.
No kidding.
Yep. Huh. I've been tracking that deer for years.
Mm-hmm.
So
have you gotten on him? Like, have you seen him on the hoof in hunt?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He How wins close every have you gotten?
45, 48 yards. I've had him within 60 a couple times. He wins all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He just always wins. Last 2 years ago I seen him. He must, I don't know, he got up at like 5 in the afternoon early season and walking right across this clear opening, you know, about 100 yards away. That's for my first, you know, one of my first and come like just a huge white frame, you know. And then after that, I really buckled down and I figured out his home range, figure out when he's there. I figure out when he shifts to a different home range in that marsh. Mm-hmm. So usually October 16th or 18th, he kind of shifts. And that's his MO in the last, you know, we've had a drought here the last couple years.
Yeah.
So last year I really boogered everything up because there was no water in them, you know, any of the marshes. And so that really, really screwed up the deer movement. He kind of moved out of there, but yeah, I've had different encounters. I've had him at 48 yards hit my mock scrape as daylight ended. And I was just climbing down from my tree.
Oh no.
It was just a few minutes after, you know, I knew he was bedded. I'm like, he's bedded in one of these little clumps of brush, you know, sure as, you know, I could still see his silhouette. And I was hanging off my tree and I'm like, that's him. I know it's him. And then I could hear him raking his horns or antlers. I mean, and and then he moved off towards where he was feeding, you know.
What time of year was that?
It's all early season.
Oh,
we're talking right. You know, first couple weeks of the season I'm on this year.
You have any idea where he goes during the rut or later in the season? Do you jump to private or like, how is he still?
He
just disappears.
No, he doesn't disappear. Okay. Last year he disappeared.
Okay.
Cause he shifted to another property. I think some private property. Like last year, he just shifts a little bit in the marsh. Like right now his home range is primarily on public.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that. Last year I went into early season in the morning and I didn't know it at the time, but I was bedded probably about, I was up in my tree about 40 yards from his bed he was trying to get back to. And as daylight, the wind was steady at a certain angle, just off wind of him as he was walking back in. But when that wind would let up, it would pull back towards he was coming. So I took a chance, and as long as that wind was this way, I was golden. You know, I mean, I'm swinging for defenses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens right at daylight, that wind kind of died down for a second. And it pulled back to him.
Yeah.
And he took off. You know, and I got out of my stand and I looked and I found his bed like 40 yards away, you know, with a rub right there from his rub.
Yeah.
So,
dang. That thermal creep is something that I've been hearing a handful of guys talk about. That little bit where, you know, you pay attention, you look at your phone weather or whatever it may be, and it says like, yep, like weather's blowing or the wind's blowing, you know, southwest or whatever at 8 miles an hour. Well, maybe it's supposed to be, like the majority of it is, but when it dies down, oh my gosh, it'll ruin your hunt.
Yeah. And that marsh grass kind of retains the heat a little more, you know, so when that sun's going down, the marsh grass is still a little heated up, so it's doing different things. So
yeah
it's, you just got to understand how, just like water going through a river, you know, it's kind of flowing through there. But there's been a couple instances where, I've been on that buck and he swings downwind of me. And then he's, you know, I'm like this with my bow, because these marshes, they can go anywhere they want. You know, there's like there's not like a specific trail. There's specific areas he travels, corridors. And, he got downwind 60 yards of me one time and he just stared in my direction for about 5 minutes. Then I kind of videotaped and then he turned around and just walked away.
Huh.
He doesn't run. He just, he doesn't run. He just moves around in there. So he's probably about 6 or 7 years old this year, I'm thinking.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's my white whale though. I mean, he's been screwing up some seasons of mine. So,
well, man, I hope you're able to catch up to him this year. And I would like to see that thing hard horned and in your hands there in a couple weeks, man. That would be incredible. Cause that thing's a freak, but
yeah, he's nice. That's a nice deer.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, he is. But man, this has been a freaking pleasure. I learned in all of these, you know, podcasts that I do and everything. I learned a lot this evening. So, thank you for coming on. And where can folks go to find, well, basically see the picture of this buck that we're talking about here, and follow along with your season and everything you're putting out there?
Instagram, primarily. My handle on there is Shadow Pursuits, Shadow_Pursuits. And I did that because I just want to be kind of a shadow in the woods moving around. I don't, you know, that's basically why I did that. But on Instagram, they can locate me on there.
Awesome. Yeah, I would say Shadow Pursuits is the shadow is, it's a fitting title, I would say. But
yeah, you just want to be a ghost in the woods.
Yep, exactly. Well, dude, this was a blast. I sincerely appreciate your time this evening. Good luck this fall, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked this episode, please be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at the Wisconsin Sportsman Pod. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore in this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, XOP, Onyx, and Huntworth. Please go support the brands that support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.